Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. Kazakhstan held its first post-Nazarbayev presidential elections on June 9th, in which Nazarbayev's hand-picked candidate, Kasym Jomart Tokayev, declared a winner with over 70% of the vote. The process was criticized by OSCE and outraged youth activists, calling the process illegitimate. Soon, young people took the streets in Almaty, and the discontent continued to grow despite massive crackdown by the authorities. At the center of this unprecedented discontent stands a group called Oyan Kazakhstan. So today we are here to discuss this group. Who are they? What do they do? And how do they see their own future going forward in the political landscape of Kazakhstan? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Asiya Tolesova, the youth leader who sparked this moment. Breed Standish, Nur-Sultan-based journalist who covers Kazakhstan for foreign policy. Torikul Durov, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service. And Bruce Spanier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
Asiya, let's start with you. So how did this thing started? Let's talk from the beginning. So what's the story of how this famous picture in which you and your fellow activist colleague Baybaro seen holding a banner which says you cannot run from the truth. So how did this come about?
I don't know. It's just, I guess it was a personal protest which followed after Nazarbayev announced his resignation.
But what I'm saying
and
is,
then the events are,
did you sit down and think about this, like what to write, how to write, and what to do with this, and how did you choose the place where you were standing? Was there any kind of a brainstorming behind this?
No, I think it was we came up with an idea like a week before the marathon, and we had to, like, on the day of the marathon, we had to think on the go because we didn't really have anything planned. We just wanted to use this opportunity to draw people's attention to the issues which were important to us, like the upcoming elections.
Then this entire process followed. Like, could you imagine this one action leading to this huge movement or huge protest?
No, we didn't foresee, like, we didn't see it coming. We didn't expect people to be so supportive of what we did. And it was a surprise, definitely.
You know, every big change starts with a kind of iconic action of some sort. Is it fair to say that this protest and what followed next was the birth of this entire youth movement in Kazakhstan, the latest one?
Well, it kind of triggered a series of events. And I mean, many more young people across the country started using art as a form of protest.
Right.
And I mean, that in a way led to the events that followed and that are still happening today.
Right. You know, I also like this to be a two-way discussion. Please feel free to ask questions to each other. So, Reid, your point on the same question, and I have a couple of others to follow up with.
You know, obviously, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that what Asiya and Baybaros did was a catalyst to a lot of the activism that's happened this spring in Kazakhstan. You know, obviously, I think that the main sort of thing that set all of this off was Nazarbayev's surprise resignation back in March, which I think caught a lot of people, especially in the country, you know, off guard. I think that, you know, the amount of people that actually knew that was coming, that resignation was in the works, you know, you could probably count them on one hand. So, you know, obviously that brought a bit of a moment of optimism, which was quickly stamped out, I think, you know, after, you know, Tokayev's kind of first action as interim president was to rename the capital Astana to Nur-Sultan, which I think sent a pretty clear message to people that this was not going to be a big moment of liberalization, reform, or opening that perhaps a lot of people in the country were hoping for. So, you know, I think part of what's happened in the last few months and why it's been so interesting to watch and why it's been an important moment for this country has been in part because of the quite heavy-handed response from the authorities. You know, as much as what I think Asiya and a lot of her kind of fellow activists and colleagues have done to try, you know, raise awareness to these issues and find interesting and very smart ways to raise them, you know, I think if the government hadn't thrown them in jail in the same way, perhaps, you know, they wouldn't have received as much attention as they did, and perhaps things wouldn't have caught as much momentum as they have.
Right.
I agree, yeah.
Torukul, you have been following these movements. I mean, in Kazakhstan, we have seen a number of protests taking place lately, like, you know, the oil workers, then the land reform, then the mothers, now that the youth movement. So what was so much appealing in this latest action that the ASEAN and her colleagues started, which attracted lots of people? What were some of the contributing factors for that, Torukul?
Thank you. It was a really clear, a fresh voice of a new wave of protests. It was a new kind of a message, which we haven't seen in Kazakhstan probably for years. And it was very creative, with full of meaning and art, and it was beautiful. And what Asia and Bibaris started, continued with so many other very simple but clear messages. We remember the citation from the Constitution that the real power belongs to the nation. We see a blank paper protest.
Right.
We see invisible kind of paper. And they were all what reaction these actions got from the government and from police was very, very interesting. And it probably awakened the society. That is why probably these young activists are calling their movement as Wake Up Kazakhstan. Because in any society, we see it from history of many countries, from many events, that youth are usually very sensitive part of the society. They feel it very clearly, what is happening, what is going wrong, even though they might not have experience. But they feel, and they are very sincere and open to express it. And that is, I think, for Kazakhstan, it's a good momentum in taking that moment as a good start, new start for the government. But unfortunately, we don't see adequate reaction from the authorities to suggest kind of a platform of dialogue with different parts of the society.
Bruce, also, I want to take your point on that.
Well, I mean, certainly I agree with that. The message that they had was very simple and very clear that they've been getting across. You know, I mean, it had to have been a huge disappointment that even if you're willing to accept the fact that Tokayev was a handpicked successor, you know, I mean, he started out from the beginning of saying, you know, Elbasy has got these great policies. I have no intention of changing it. You know, we're going to keep on the same course. I mean, this is really disappointing to people that feel like they're not part of the system and can't have access to the system either. You know, you mentioned a lot of groups that have had problems with this. You know, it's the oil workers, it's the mothers, single mothers or mothers with a lot of kids. I mean, there's a lot of people that are looking for some kind of change. And when you have a change of leadership, you're hoping that your personal life might actually see some kind of change too. And, you know, like I said, from the very beginning, Tokayev indicated that really wasn't what he was looking at all. You know, that stability was key, continuity was key, and that there weren't going to be any major changes coming, you know, with him as president. So this is hugely disappointing to a lot of people in Kazakhstan to hear. They were hoping for something new, something that offered them some opportunities in the future. And he basically was saying that I'm not going to offer you any of that.
Yeah. Talking of these, you know, the messages, Asia, in a couple of words, can you explain what is that you want, the group wants?
Well, what we want is, we just want institutions that work.
What does that mean?
I mean, we see corruption as a systemic, as a major problem for the country. And we want to be able to address this problem through fixing our justice system. Because as of now, there's no way to get a fair trial. And I mean, this is one of the major concerns of mine, that I mean, the justice system isn't working in Kazakhstan. So that's one thing we want to fix. We also want a stronger parliament, because now the president has a lot of power in his hands, and he's basically appointing all the judges and all the mayors of the city. And I mean, no one is really accountable to the people, but only to the president, and which makes all the policies very ineffective, and people are unable in any way to influence the outcomes of these policies, and hence we have lots of problems.
Rita, the messages that Asia just mentioned, how does this come out to you as a journalist? I mean, is it a kind of a centrally united message, or you are hearing more voices, different ways of expression? I don't know. How do you hear that being based locally?
I mean, it's quite clear, you know, despite as much as, you know, Oyo and Kazakhstan and you know, everything, the kind of, you know, rush of activism we've seen in the last few months has been a really big thing that's interesting in this country that's been different in the past. You know, there still isn't what I would call an organized opposition. You know, you have sort of remnants of the previous opposition, you know, people from kind of Democratic Choice of Kazakhstan and those types of people who, you know, are still around here, who are out protesting on the weekend in you know, around the country, but especially in Almaty and Nur-Sultan. And, you know, so the beyond being sort of some broad kind of grievances and anger towards the government, I think that things are still kind of like disunited, which I think has obviously been very much by design of the government of many years. And you can see the way especially they've approached, you know, Democratic Choice of Kazakhstan over the years is it's labeled as an extremist organization. You know, people who participate in it are, you know, tried actually as extremists under the law in this country. We saw the very heavy-handed and brutal, you know, kind of response from the security services over the weekend and early into this week as well. But at the same time, you know, I think that what, you know, for me as a journalist, what I'm going to be watching is how something like Oyo and Kazakhstan, how Asya and her colleagues can, you know, keep the momentum going in the future. You know, what kind of avenues are going to be available? Because, you know, I think in a way what their type of organization, their type of grassroots effort is something that's much more difficult for the government to be able to respond to in the same way that they respond to other forms of opposition, which is just brute force. So that's sort of what I think is going to be the big story that we should all be paying attention to in the, you know, the months and years really to come is, you know, Oyo and Kazakhstan is essentially trying to create a movement from scratch. Right. You know, this is not just trying to, you know, grow something from the beginning, but you're also trying to grow a kind of movement out of the soil that's been salted for 30 years of autocracy, which is a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. I like to talk about the heavy hand in which the authorities are handling this a little bit later. But before that, you also mentioned, Reid, and a couple of very important points I think I should ask you back in this. You know, in terms of the organization, the structure, we have seen the mothers protest. I believe they also came out from the scratch, as this youth movement is. The oil workers also came out and from the scratch, and suddenly they come and does a couple of protests and they go away. So in terms of the structure, Asya, how we should read this group? What kind of structure is this group is based on?
I feel like we are still in the process of getting to know each other better. I mean, some of the protesters, like the protests which happened the day of the election and the day after, they were new people to us. It's like two completely different groups of people coming together and joining in the protest. I feel like there's a lot, like language is definitely an issue in Kazakhstan because we have a huge like Kazakh-speaking community and also like Kazakh-speaking group and also the Russian-speaking group. And we live like in two different universes. Like, and we rarely intersect. It was surprising to me that we're finally beginning to see each other and like it's like something has happened and we are now starting to see each other as companions or
so you are saying in many.
Can I get a question in,
sure,
Mr. Tahir?
Sure.
Asya, I have a question for you too. I know your group is relatively new, and I mean you just made your declaration that you were a group very, very recently, a little more than a week ago. What kind of communication do you have with other parts of the country? I mean, you're based in Almaty. Do you talk with people in Astana, or and are you able to speak with people in other places, Shymkent, Ataral, those kind of places?
I was able to meet some of a group of young activists from Astana when I was visiting a month ago. And one of them is Alimjan, who is now in the army. Many other people are reaching out through social networks, Instagram, Facebook. Yeah, right now all the communications is online. We haven't really had a chance to meet each other.
Just a follow-up question on that. When you have these protests in, let's say, in Nur-Sultan, Almaty, in Shymkent, or some other places, how those protests are planned? How you choose the places where you do these things and how you communicate these slogans?
Yeah, so far we haven't organized any meetings. We just, whatever we did were art activism. We see it as art activism. And I mean, all the protests organized previously were not organized by us. That's what I mean. It's like something that we did triggered like a series of events that we have not really... I guess it was just we hit the point, and apparently message was so right. And I mean, people are just coming up on the streets with the same message that we have.
Did you?
And that's
amazing.
Yeah, the protests on the June 10th, the day right after the election. I think, well, you know what happened, right? There was, on the day of the election, I was monitoring the elections. Within our independent monitoring network.
Right.
And what we saw is a drastic difference between the official results of the election and what we actually were witnessing as independent, I don't know, as just people who were monitoring the elections.
Right.
And the official turnout rate was 70%. And what we witnessed is like the highest turnout rate we had. Our allocations was like 35%. Yeah, and it was very surprising because when we started counting the votes, the number of votes for Kasanov and for Takayev were approximately the same.
Right.
And this isn't what we were told by the official results. And that the announcement Kasanov made the next day and his unwillingness to, like, fight made people very angry, especially those people like Rinadze, the famous folk singer, and he has a huge audience, and he was basically supporting Kasanov all this time. And with Kasanov's announcement the next day made people angry and made King disappointed, and he made a public apology to his supporter, and that's I think that's how the protest started.
Okay. Torukul, I was just reading your news agenda today. You have been talking to a couple of parliamentarians about youth activists. How they have been reacting to this, and is there any change do you see among their reactions?
Actually, answers of members of parliament do not differ from the answer of a new president, Kasym-Jomart Tokayev, on the day of election. On the day of election, our correspondent, Sanya Tuykan, asked him the question, saying, does he know about protests going on in the country, and some people are coming with slogans like, Tokayev is not my president.
Right.
And he said, yes, I have information about it, and if the people are chanting these slogans, it's their choice. It was, you know, the same kind of answer what we hear from the parliament members and from other authorities. And it doesn't surprise, actually, anyone, because, you know, the one of the important factors that prevents now successful resolution of the current crisis is the structure of power in Kazakhstan itself. As Asiya told before, for example, we as journalists talk to many people in the government circle, business and other areas. And what we see right now is there is only one decision maker, which does not allow any other structure of the government make decisions. All the branches of the government, I mean, on ministerial level, for example, operate out of fear from the people above them. And they never say no to them. And nobody below that level say no to this level, for example. Yeah, you know, we see a very clear vertical of power, like the version Putin has been building in Russia in the last 2 decades, for example. But today, the system does not seem to work. There is a big crisis. Which is almost impossible to solve because there is no independent structures in any areas from the government, which might have worked as a mediator, for example, between angry protesters and the power. Police maybe sympathizes or maybe do not see any big problem in demands for protesters, for example, but they should follow the order from the above to arrest local authorities, for example, maybe do not see any problem in demands of protesting mothers or other groups, but they do not dare to suggest any creative new ways to solve the problem, again, because of the fear of, you know, to initiate, to raise their voice.
Right.
So I think it is difficult to change now. This circle of problem until something extraordinary would not happen.
Which is what?
Which is, you know, who knows in Kazakhstan? Kazakhstan is now, we couldn't expect, for example, 1 year ago that, as Reid before said, it was like surprising resignation of Nazarbayev, even though we everybody was talking for years that Nazarbayev anytime will start changing the transit of power, and it's coming, transit of power every year. It was the same kind of questions. But what happened this year, there probably were so many factors, starting from the death of another leader in the region, Islam Karimov, in Uzbekistan. We see a clear changes in structure of the government, in, you know, constitution reforms since the beginning of 2017. In September 2016, Islam Karimov died. And after that, in half a year, Kazakhstan starts constitutional reform. Then Nazarbayev announces the share of power between, like, from the president to parliament and government, but still surface is changing, but the nature is stays as it was before. And then there were creation of a security council. So these kind of steps, they were so fast. And everything started from the beginning of this year dramatically fast. Maybe there were some kind of other factors like protest of mothers, which came in February after the tragic event in Astana with the death of five little sisters. And then many people understood that they are living in a different country than portrayed by state media, know, and they're seeing that they do not have enough support from the government, even though the country is very rich. And people started organizing protest demonstrations, and later Nazarbayev saw the scale and announced the resignation of the government. And in few weeks, we see a resignation of Nazarbayev. So these events continued and developed very, very fast.
Okay, Reid, just very quickly, this youth movement, how big of a group this become? I understand from Asia's points that new people are, new faces are coming and joining them with their own grievances. And do you see, like, the previous protest movements, like mothers or oil workers, some other groups are joining them, and that this is growing further? Do you see any sign and indications like that?
I mean, so far, no. I mean, obviously, this is still quite young in the process of it. But that's sort of what I think is the main obstacle facing any kind of you know, efforts for reform or anything like that in the country. It's quite disparate at the moment. You know, you do have these various different groups who come from sort of different you know, parts of the country, different sort of socioeconomic kind of, you know, factions within society. And you know, it's pretty hard to unify all those people. And you know, I think what Asya was saying earlier is, you know, it seems that at least, you know, from her and the other people involved in Oyan Kazakhstan with her, you know, there does seem to be at least some conscious effort and sort of plans to be trying to, you know, do more outreach to those types of people. But, you know, so far, I mean, I haven't seen anything to say that there is a real kind of movement growing at the moment. You know, obviously, there's a pretty heavy-handed and you know, pretty harsh response that happened over the weekend here, which I think, you know, was very much by design to reinstill fear in people and remind people what happens when you come out and protest. So, you know, I'm kind of curious to see how much of this will stay forward. You know, as much as I think it's correct to say that people in Kazakhstan are not apolitical, you know, they very much will follow the kind of political trends and things like that happening in the country. But I think, you know, for people to really take political action requires another kind of force behind it. And the only really big things is, like, perhaps there could be another big movement, you know, if there's a big event that happens, like, you know, a fire, something like that, like we saw earlier, perhaps that could set something off. Or perhaps if there's something economic issues could maybe again kind of motivate, you know, give more momentum to things and drive more people together. But at the moment, I mean, it's very much an uphill battle.
Okay. Asya, jump in. You want to say something?
I have a question for Reid. What sort of political action do you have in mind?
Do I have in mind?
Yeah, like what is it that should trigger, like you would saying that that something should happen to
bring all these forces together.
You know, I was just saying something needs to happen more in the country. You know, we saw the election was a force that drove a lot of different people kind of out onto the streets, you know, people that normally wouldn't be interacting with each other. But now it's sort of, okay, well, what else is there to keep that going now, especially after such a kind of like, you know, crackdown that we saw in the last few days, because they realistically scared a lot of people to come out and do that again, right? So maybe, so I don't know if there's issues with the economy. Maybe that's something that drives people out and causes
them to be. But I mean, the political action that you're saying is that what else should we do to have, I mean, how I see it, like there is still hope that we don't have to have a lot of people on the streets protesting in order to see a significant change. We're hoping that we'll be able to achieve it through
discussion, dialogue with the government. That's what you are hoping.
Is what I meant. And this is what we're hoping for.
Okay.
Muhammad, can I ask one question, Asya?
Sure.
Asya, you said before, and it has been before like this, that you were coming with interesting your performance, like art protest, mainly in social media. What is your next kind of strategy if there will not be any change? And every time in protests, police will arrest people, and there will not be, for example, big political changes. What would you do next?
Well, we are hoping, I mean, some of the folk singers that I was mentioning, he announced that he's going to, we have parliamentary elections coming just in the end of summer or like in the fall. Mm-hmm. And he announced that he's going to register a party.
I see you cut off. So you said he's going to register a party. Who are we talking about?
Dinad Zaitov, the guy who was in the center of the protest on the June 10th, it's a singer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, we hear similar statements from other people, and I mean, we're trying to build like a network of people. We see ourselves as a very horizontal movement, a network without leaders or with many leaders. Huh.
So you are not going to go to the streets, right?
We will. We are already doing an event called Seruyan. Seruyan in Kazakh means just a walk. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to get people to get used to being outside and feeling free to express themselves in any way they want. It's not a protest. It's just we can find like creative ways of engaging people without having them engage in violent acts of protest or like without having to go into direct conflict with the government. We're hoping to inspire political change through constant presence on the streets of Almaty, but without having to be aggressive. I feel like we do need to be firm in a very determined and the things that we are demanding, but we feel like we should come up with wiser strategies to achieve this change.
Okay, thank you, Asya. So what future holds for this moment, and where is this headed going forward? Let's continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, I'm joined by Asya Tulasova, the youth leader, one of the founding members of the Oyan Kazakhstan Youth Movement. Reid Standish is joining us. He is based in Nur Sultan, covers Kazakhstan for foreign policy. And Torkel Dorup is joining us from Prague, who is the director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service, along Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. I'm Mohamed Tahir, here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing the ongoing youth-led protests in Kazakhstan. And I need to wrap up this discussion very soon. But before that, Asya, I was kind of curious when you were talking, if there was any way that you can start this again, is there anything you would do differently?
No, I'm pretty happy with how things are going. The only thing I wish I spoke Kazakh, and I don't speak the language. And it feels like sometimes the messages that I want to communicate, they don't... Yeah, I feel I'm happy with how, you know, we're now merging the country and trying to develop the sense of nation, which I think is in a way lacking, because Kazakhstan has a very unique history in population. And I feel like maybe we're starting this long process now of actually creating the sense of one nation, which will later then help us be more effective in whatever we want to achieve. Yeah, and I feel like that's one of the major issues for me right now, is I wish I spoke Kazakh, and I'm learning it now, and I'm hoping that we all will learn to speak one language in order to communicate with each other more effectively.
Right. You know, whatever you guys are doing, it certainly makes authorities so angry about this. Like, you know, at the moment, some...
But this is what we mean, you know? Yeah. We don't want to make anyone angry. We want us to be recognized the shortfalls, and we want the awakening. It's like a spiritual awakening, in a sense. Right. And maybe in that sense, the revolution that we have in mind is different. It's like a spiritual revolution. Even as silly as that may sound, it's what we're hoping for.
Okay, Bruce, you know, as we speak, around 1,000 people, I believe, is the latest number of protesters being arrested today, today's Thursday. By the day when we will publish this podcast, the numbers might change. So what explains the authorities' heavy hand in treating these people?
I think we even talked about this a couple of months ago, but I mean, obviously they had a plan for the transition of power, you know, and it was obvious that they wanted this to go as smoothly as possible. I mean, what's been happening in the last few days is a complete nightmare. The story of the campaign and the election has been totally moved aside by the protests that have gone on in Kazakhstan. They don't want any kind of instability. They want Tokayev to be respected, perhaps not quite to the same degree Nazarbayev was, but still that people will listen to what he has to say without questioning his authority in any way at all, you know, and clearly that has not happened from the very start. But what we see with the detentions last night and the absurd statement from the interior minister this morning that no one was detained at all yesterday, when there was video everywhere of this happening, you know, they want to send a message to everyone that they're just not going to put up with this at all. And whether you like it or not, Tokayev's in. He's going to be in, you know, and they're not going to let people come out on the street and protest against it, because, one, they want the image of Kazakhstan as a stable country and, you know, a dependable partner, but, two, they don't want anyone inside the country to get the idea that protests work. And that they can get what they want from the government, you know, by coming out in the streets and demanding stuff, because they're afraid that it'll have a snowball effect. If it's a protest about one issue today, they'll add two or three other issues on it tomorrow. And there's hundreds of issues out there that people are angry about in Kazakhstan. So, you know, this is a serious threat, at least in the eyes of the leadership, who aren't used to making concessions at all.
It's certainly...
Yeah, can I add?
Yep, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you're saying that Tokayev is in, and he's in formally. And I mean, what this country is all about is just being formal. And I mean, on paper, he's in, but he's not. And people recognize it now. If it wasn't obvious with the Nazarbayev, now we have figures and numbers that just we know that he's really not supported. But like the number of people that he's really supported by is not greater than 20%, like 15 to 20%, if we were to rely on the outcomes of elections that were the independent monitoring network has. So, and I mean, that is very refreshing, is that they were hoping to make him a legitimate president, but he's not. And we now all know it.
If I can get in one thing, because I think it's really important to ask Asia about any possible connections with the democratic choice of Kazakhstan, because this is something that authorities have already hinted at. That these are the people, you know, Reid mentioned earlier, this is, they've been declared an extremist group. And you see that authorities are trying to say, well, you know, Ayan Kazakhstan is also getting money from these people, or they're working with them. So it's really important, I think, Asia, if you can tell us what, if any, relationship you have with this group, or no relationship, or what, you know, so since this is going to be on the air, you can clarify for everyone right now what your group is about and who you work with or do not work with.
Who we work with? We work with, we're just a bunch of people.
But as far as the Blazov's party?
No, not, we're not working with them. We, however, feel sorry for the people who go to protest and get arrested without having any access to legal consultations or whatever. In that way, we will definitely support everyone who needs any legal help or any other help. And that was the only reason we were at the protests yesterday, just to make sure that we have people's backs covered and no one gets hurt.
Yeah, so we understand that you have no connection to one of these known exiled opposition, either Avliazov or Kazgeldin, whoever they are. That's our understanding. Then the question someone might ask is, I mean, running an entire organization is kind of takes lots of resources. Where are you getting all these resources from? I mean, how you are able to run this entire organization?
It's a network. We all have jobs, and we don't have an office. Mm-hmm. Everyone's working from home. And right now we're figuring out, like, it's a crowdfunding.
Nice.
Like, right now we use crowdfunding as a way to raise money for anything we need, but we don't require a lot of money. Like, we don't hardly have any expenses. And we are using all the technology has to offer today to its full potential. So, and I mean, if we in the nearest future will require more funding, we'll probably announce like a crowdfunding campaign or whatever of some sort.
Okay, so with this kind of structure, what is your own thinking? How long this moment can last? I mean, like other protests like we have seen in the past, oil workers, they were there for a couple of weeks and gone, and mothers protest and the land reform and all these things. Are you guys here to stay, or how do you see your own future?
We see ourselves, we are here to stay. This is how we see ourselves. Like, this is, I think, what differentiates us from other groups, because we're very determined to, like, we have certain goals that we set for ourselves, and we will not cease working before we achieve those goals.
Reid, what's your thought? I mean, what future holds for this group now? How do you see it? And as someone, you've been in Kazakhstan, covering this country for a long time, all the other protesters that we have mentioned, we spoke about. So how do you see the future of this group?
Yeah, you know, obviously I kind of don't want to, I'm not part of the prediction business, but I mean, given out of everything that I've seen in the last few months, you know, it's pretty undeniable that, you know, to a degree this has been post-Nazarbayev's resignation up until the election on Sunday, June 9th, you know, that this has been an important moment in the history of Kazakhstan. There's no denying that. And in a way, the genie's out of the bottle, and that's not going back in. And that the level of dissent and the kind of, you know, what do you want to call it, political consciousness in the country, like, that is very obvious, I think, to anyone who spent any time here in the last little bit, that there is more conversations about, you know, how to affect change in people's lives. You know, but then, of course, looking forward, the big question is, you know, how does that get translated? Does that get, can that be channeled into something constructive, which is obviously what Asia is hoping to do. And, you know, if you ask her, as you know, we just did, you know, obviously her answer to that question is yes, it can be. You know, I'm, you know, perhaps it's just living in Nur-Sultan, I get a much more of a spurt of, you know, I don't get to see the kind of all the time, all the, you know, the grassroots activism and the kind of dissent that exists down in Almaty. It's not quite so present up here at the same time. You know, I was at the, you know, there was a call for protests on Tuesday this week, and, you know, I showed up, and, you know, there was just a few people. You know, partly this is because there was mass arrests, And I think a lot of people were still, getting processed from the system, and they just weren't possible for them to come out. But I think also there's a sense that, a lot of people are partly scared, and a lot of people have kind of, felt like they got something out of their system. And I think that's always the struggle with a lot of this stuff. And so that again, I think that's the big issue, moving forward. Can this really be translated into something sustainable? I think if it can be, it's going to be something that's really going to be youth-driven. It's going to be on social media. But it's tough, right? Obviously, this is a system that doesn't allow for things like that to exist. And, as we've all kind of acknowledged in this podcast, and all of us know very well, that system is still very much in place. Right. This is the system of the last 30 years. It's the exact same system. And it's not a system that allows, for different voices to exist and shape the system. There's one voice that shapes the system.
It's also interesting that Nazarbayev is so far so quiet about this. Have anyone heard anything, him talking about these?
Well,
he always vanishes when this stuff happens.
Yeah,
it's been his habit for a while.
Yeah, and if I can jump in there, I would also say, the sense that I've gotten is, during the transition, while Tokayev was still interim president, I think that maybe it was by reflex, maybe not even, kind of unconscious type things, like if we saw at the inauguration, Nazarbayev was standing above Tokayev, almost in this very kind of imposing type of way, showing he was still very much the man at the top. But if you saw photos from the inauguration that happened this week, actually Nazarbayev was sitting below, acknowledging that, that's sort of what I'm saying is I think that maybe there's more of a conscious effort to try to frame Tokayev as actually being, he is the president now. We should treat him as the president. And because I think that, it was quite clear that he was playing second fiddle to Nazarbayev all the last few months.
Yeah. The way the authorities are handling this kind of very, in fact, not surprising when you look into Central Asia with Iron Fist, and then what the hopes and intentions of ASEAN groups are, they cannot be so distant from each other. So how we are going to get out of this? Earlier, Torkel raised this question. Bruce, how do you see we are getting out of this situation where we are in Kazakhstan today?
Well, I'm with Reed. You're getting me into the prediction business. That's pretty dangerous. You got two factions forming up here. Like I said, the government really doesn't see that it has a need to change the way it's been doing business for years and years. That's been understood from practically every statement that's come from Tokayev or Nazarbayev or anyone during the last few months. They think that the right path is the path that they've been on for a long time. Now, clearly, we have a significant portion of the population that does not believe that this is the way to go. They don't want business as usual. Again, not for 5 years, 10 years. And let's face it, Central Asian leaders have a habit of hanging around for a long time. So some people look at this and go, my God, we could be stuck with this system. Maybe not with Tokayev specifically, but we could be stuck with the system for 20 or 30 more years. I've seen that Tokayev made statements. We even formed a committee. We're going to talk to people. Generally, that hasn't worked out at all. These are the kind of statements these leaders make right after something like this, this kind of demonstrations and actions are going on, and they figure that it'll go away in 3 months and the committee will be disbanded and that'll be the end of it. So this is tough. Reed said sustainability is key here. They got to be able to peacefully express their positions, and they got to be able to get foreign media to report on this so that it's understood in the outside world that this is going on. Left to the Kazakh government, you can't expect any changes at all unless they absolutely have to change. That's been their history.
Hmm. It's also interesting that the outside world is kind of quiet on this. Earlier, OSCE had its own statement regarding the elections. Then today, I believe there was some criticism by UN on what's going on. It's just a dead silence otherwise. Reid, any interpretation of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think actually the silence is very much on purpose in a lot of ways. I think that there was an EU statement that just came out the other day as well about the protests. Hmm. But, my understanding is it's actually, it's kind of standard protocol, after a new president is sworn in for a country, for different nations to send notes of congratulations, and so I think that actually if you want, as much as, yes, we could, maybe berate some of the larger powers for not being hypercritical of what happened, especially, breaking up protests and stuff like that. I think what would be an important thing to look at, and what I've been looking at, is not so much who has been saying things, but who has not been saying things. Uh-huh. And what I mean by that is who has not yet issued notes of congratulating the newly sworn in President Tokayev. And I think that
anything notable there in your observation?
I would just say that it's mostly pretty much, you know, apart from, say, you know, Hungary, you know, a few other countries in the Balkans, and I think Lithuania, you know, most of the EU is yet to issue anything. The United States, Canada have not said anything yet. And, you know, I think eventually they need to do that. That's just kind of standard diplomatic protocol. That's how things work. But I think the countries are going to be dragging their feet on that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
We will probably hear some congratulations from the leaders tomorrow in Bishkek when they are meeting with Tokayev at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up, right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, in our earlier conversation last week, I think our guest from Asia's group, Asim, what was the second name? Asim Japishiva.
Japishiva.
So she said, I think it was really thoughtful kind of comment. She said, like, whatever happens in these elections, this won't be the same election and this won't be the same Kazakhstan. It certainly looks like she was right. Things are different today. Asiyev, just a very brief question. Where we should expect to see you in 2 years? Do you have your own kind of future thinking plans?
Yeah, we definitely are encouraging everyone to get involved into local politics and participate in upcoming elections to local councils, Maslihat.
Are you going to run for an office?
I tried in 2016.
Oh, you did?
Unfortunately, it's a whole different story, yeah. But I will definitely try next time.
Okay, let's see. We will be watching you, Asiya. Thank you very much. Asiya Tulishova, the youth leader from Kazakhstan. Reid Standish, also from Kazakhstan, correspondent for foreign policy there. Toro Kuldorov, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service. And Bruce Spanier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog. Thank you very much, colleagues. I have to end the discussion here. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.